One in our devotional comes from John chapter 5, verses 1 through 9. And after this, there was a feast of the Jews, and Jesus went up to Jerusalem. Now there is at Jerusalem by the sheep market a pool, which is called in the Hebrew tongue Bethesda, having five porches. And these lay a great multitude of impotent folk, of blind, halt, weathered, waiting for the moving of the water. For an angel went down at a certain season into the pool and troubled the water. Whosoever then first after the troubling of the water stepped in was made whole of whatsoever disease he had. And a certain man was there which had an infirmity 38 years. When Jesus saw him lie, he knew that he had been now a long time in that case. He saith unto him, Wilt thou be made whole? The impotent man answered him, Sir, I have no man when the water is troubled to put me into the pool, but while I am coming, another steppeth down before me. Jesus said unto him, Rise, take up thy bed and walk. And immediately the man was made whole and took up his bed and walked. And on the same day was the Sabbath. Are there any announcements before we go to class? Let's go to class.
Lesson text here from John chapter 5, verses 10 through 18. The Jews therefore said unto him that was cured, It is the Sabbath day, it is not lawful for thee to carry thy bed. He answered them, He that made me whole, the same said unto me, Take up thy bed and walk. Then asked they him, What man is that which said unto thee, Take up thy bed and walk? And he that was healed wist not who it was, for Jesus had conveyed himself away, a multitude being in that place. Afterward, Jesus findeth him in the temple, and said unto him, Behold, thou art made whole, sin no more, lest a worse thing come unto thee. The man departed and told the Jews that it was Jesus which had made him whole. And therefore did the Jews persecute Jesus and sought to slay him, because he had done these things on the Sabbath day. But Jesus answered them, My Father worketh hitherto, and I work. Therefore the Jews sought the more to kill him, because he not only broke the Sabbath, but said also that God was his Father, making himself equal with God. Now, here in the 10th verse, the first verse that I read, it says here that the Jews, the thing that they brought out was, it's not lawful for you to carry your bed on the Sabbath day. And I'm assuming that they were saying that he was working, it's not lawful to work on the Sabbath day, which it was in the Old Testament. They were forbidden to do work on the Sabbath day, and I'm sure y'all all know that of the man that was out gathering sticks that was stoned to death because he was working on the Sabbath day. Now, I believe that they have said here, it's not lawful for thee to carry the bed. They've taken the context wrong there, because had they said it's not lawful for thee to work, they would have been right, and the man could have rightfully said, well, I'm not really working. This isn't actually work. So there would have been some contention there. But they were really being kind of picky, nitpicky there. But I'll get back to this in a little bit, because I don't really think that bothered them. I don't think that they were all that concerned with someone breaking the Sabbath, because I have a feeling I'm pretty sure there was more going on for them, bothering them, than this man that they were accusing of doing work. Now, the Jews had developed a lot of things that were right and wrong. They had taken the scriptures, and there were literally thousands of laws that they had come up with on their own, and they could trace these things back to the scripture says this, and what it means is, and they would translate it into one thing like had the washing of the hands. They felt like it was a sin to eat without having washing their hands, and they could trace that back to scriptures. But they took these scriptures out of context. They took them out of what God meant for them to the true meaning of showing forth of the coming of Christ, and they applied them to a meaning that the Jews themselves had given to these things. So they had taken on a righteousness of their own outside of the scriptures, outside of the meaning of the Old Testament. And because they had done this, they were able to stand and to say, well, this person's doing wrong here. He's carrying his bed, he's working, that's a sin. And we know that since Jesus told the man to do it, it wasn't a sin. It wasn't, there was nothing wrong with what the man had done. So I guess the point that I'm trying to make here is they are violating the spirit of the law. They are attempting to make everything to be done by works, to be done by works of man. Not by the Spirit of the Lord, not to be led by the Spirit of the Lord, not to be guided by Him. And I suppose in to apply that to us today, we would want to be careful not to do the same thing that they did. And it's pretty easy to say, oh, well, I would never do that. I wouldn't ever deny the Spirit of the Lord and be ritualistic and stubborn and stiff-necked and self-righteous. I wouldn't be that way. Well, that's easy to say and to think, but the truth is, it would be really easy to be that way. As I study it, and at first I look at those people, the Jews and the Pharisees and the way that they were, and I think, well, that's just so obviously wrong, and I don't see how they could miss it. And I read about them and the thought processes. I try to kind of follow along with their thought processes, and I can to a certain extent, and I can see where they got to where they were, and I can see where I could have done that. I can't condemn them a lot. If I can condemn what they did, they were wrong, and very wrong. But I can't put myself better than them because, it would be really easy today to do the same thing, to stand here and to say, you know, the truth is right here. I know the truth. Those other people are wrong. What their way of worship is wrong. Their way of conduct is wrong. Everything that they do is wrong. And the reason it's wrong is because this is right here. Well, I do believe the truth is here in this church, and I do believe that this church practices the truth. But we need to be really careful because we have a tendency, just like they did, to want to hold on to tradition. And I'm bad about that. I like traditions. I like, you know, the way things always have been. Old things. I like old things and to cling to those things. But when we stop and we study the Bible and we see, all right, exactly what did Lord command for us to do? How did He command for us to live our lives? It's pretty basic and simple. We're to have love in our hearts. We're to have a desire to serve God in truth and in spirit. We are to have a desire to take the gospel to people that they might be saved, that they might come under conviction and be saved. There's nothing in there about meeting on Sundays. There is something in there about meeting on the first day of the week. Let me back up. There's nothing in the Bible that says we are to every Sunday meet in the same house, in the same way, sing a few songs, hear some preaching. We tend to get a pattern going is what I'm trying to say. Not that there's anything wrong with that, but we can't just say that that's the way it has to be, that's the way God wants it to be, that God commanded it's going to be at 11 o'clock on a Sunday morning when the preacher starts preaching, and the preacher's going to get done around 12 or so, and we're going to go out to Cracker Barrel after that. That's not scriptural at all. That is traditional. It's ever since I've been coming to church, that's the way it's been. Now, I know that a lot of y'all may be able to go back in time, because I've heard tales of when church lasted a lot longer. It might last 2 or 3 hours all day long. I mean, I don't remember those things. It didn't happen that way. And I've also heard people talk about where didn't have Sunday church every Sunday, that the preacher went from church to church moving around. I don't know that was okay. The point is, there were traditions in the past that are no longer carried on, and I don't think those traditions were right necessarily, or wrong for that matter. I don't want you to think that I'm condemning things that we do. I do want you to think that just because it's the way we do it doesn't necessarily mean that it's right. It doesn't mean that it's wrong. We've got to be sure what we're doing is in line with the Bible, if the Bible teaches it. With the Spirit of the Lord, is that what the Spirit of the Lord? The Lord may want us to meet today here. He may want us to sing 2 songs and hear preaching, and that's what we need to do if that's what He wants. But I really believe these Jews thought that they were doing right. I think they thought that that's what God wanted, or at least they started off thinking that. Now, I said earlier that I didn't think they really were all that concerned about Him carrying that bed, and I don't think they were. I think that when Jesus was there, it struck them. They began to see their falling, their downfall. They began to see where they had erred, and they didn't like that. They didn't want to see that. They wanted to hang on to that tradition. They wanted to hang on to the comfort that they had of the way things always had been, the way that, you know, they'd been brought up, and the way that their parents had been brought up, or whatever. And that was comforting to them. They liked that, and they wanted to stick with it. And Jesus was shaking that up, because He was showing them that they needed to have a concern for the people that was around them. They needed to be, these Jews needed to have been worried about this lame man, and they needed to be taking care of him. They probably weren't taking care of the people that were around them the way they ought to be. So they begin to inquire here, what man is it which said, take up thy bed? And the 13th verse, and he that was healed wist not who it was, for Jesus conveyed himself away, a multitude being in that place. Now, when I studied that, I wondered, did this man get saved when Jesus said, take up your bed and walk? Or did he just get healed of the physical ailment? I wasn't sure about that, and I'm still not 100% sure. But I think I might have learned something here. Because Jesus told the man to take up his bed and walk, and the man did, and he went away. And the man didn't know who he was. They asked him, and he didn't know. And then it says in the 14th verse, afterward Jesus findeth him in the temple. All right, first off, the Lord found this man again. The man didn't find Jesus. Jesus found the man. And he said, and Jesus said unto him, behold, thou art made whole, sin no more, lest a worse thing come to thee. My thought is that Jesus first healed the man of his physical infirmity, and then at this later point, when he says, thou art made whole, I believe that the man got saved. That's just my belief. I could be wrong. If you don't agree, there's no problem there for me. I don't know that I'm right. But he says, thou art made whole, sin no more. And, you know, Jesus finds this man in the temple. I think that the man had been healed of his physical infirmity, and the man knew something had occurred. I mean, he obviously knew he'd been healed, but he knew that he had been around somebody that was great, somebody that had something. And he's gone, and the man is a Jew. He's gone to this temple, and he's seeking. He wants to know who is this? What's going on with me? You know, not just the physical healing of my body, but who was this person that was able to do this? I think that's what he's doing in the temple. He's seeking the Lord. He's seeking answers. And Jesus came and answered that question for him. And I think that Jesus saved his soul at that point. Now, the man wasn't in control at any point there. He when he was impaired before that body of water, he wasn't in control at all. He couldn't even get himself into the body of water. And then after that, he had been made physically whole. He still wasn't in control. He still needed something. But he knew where to turn. He may have not known exactly where to turn, but he had an idea. He had something drawing him. Well, you know, a lot of times I don't know what to do. I don't know where to turn or what to do as far as what actual words I need to say. Sometimes standing up here, I'll tell you, I don't know what to say. But more than that, dealing with other people, how to instruct other people. I'm at a loss for words a lot of times. But the Lord never is. He knows what I need to say. And if I'll ask him, if I'll turn to him, and I think that's what this man did. I think he was turning to God in this temple and asking, you know, he was asking God for direction, for guidance, for something. And that's what we need to be doing. We need to be seeking direction from God for guidance, for words to speak to other people, for words to speak to each other. You know, we all face hard times. Y'all are going through hard times perhaps right now. I go through some difficult times. We need encouragement. We need strength from each other. But, you know, when you need to talk with me, the Lord needs to let you know what it is I need to hear. And the same thing with you. When I speak with you, the Lord needs to be in our hearts, in our words. And he's not going to be there when we're not where we need to be. When we're off out in the world, traipsing about, having fun, at ease in Zion, as the Bible says, then we have separated ourselves from God. And he's not going to be off to the side. When we go off to the side, he's not going to be there. He's going to do what he needs to do to bring us back to the center. But in the meantime, opportunities are going past. Opportunities to talk to lost people. Opportunities to talk to saved people that may need guidance or correction or whatever. All types of opportunities pass by because we're not where we need to be. We're off somewhere else. Now, that was the same situation that the Jews were in when they got upset about this man carrying his bed. They had separated themselves from God. They had gone off path. They weren't in the center. And God was trying to steer them back to him. He was trying to bring them back into the fold. Some of them heard. Some of them obeyed. Some of them moved back where they needed to be. But the majority, as a nation, they did not. Now, I think that we could learn a lot from that, speaking as a nation here today, the United States. God wants this country to come back. He wants this country to move back into the center of his will. A few people may listen. A few people may hear. But it has to be from... it has to begin with those of us that can hear. The lost people, they can't hear God. They can't... they can only hear him through us if we will go out and be a light. And when I say hear, I don't mean with the ears, although that's necessary and that's needed. But what I mean is to let our light shine that they might see, hear, see, feel, get a grasp that there is a God, there is a Savior, and there is a way to him. We need to be that light. Now, It says here the man departed and told the Jews that it was Jesus which had made him whole. I don't really exactly know what to take of that, because that seems as if that was doing Jesus a disservice, but I don't know. Maybe that was what the Lord wanted. I can't really put that into context there as to why the man would do that. Because in the 16th verse there it says, "And therefore did the Jews persecute Jesus and sought to slay him because he had done these things on the Sabbath day." And I know here in the 16th verse that these things is plural. He had done more than one thing. He had healed the man of his physical infirmity, and I think that he had saved his soul. That's what it's referring to, is things. More than one thing had been accomplished. But that's my take on it. But Jesus answering them, that is the Jews, "My Father worketh hitherto, and I work." God has something, work to be done. He's got things to be accomplished. And Jesus was there to do those things. He was there because that's what God wanted. Wherever God wanted him to be, whatever God wanted him to say, Jesus was there to do that. And he completed that completely. He perfectly, without fail. I haven't done so well myself. And the reason I say that is because that is the mark that we ought to be striving for, to be where God would have us to be, to do what He'd have us to do, to say what He would have us to do, as Jesus did, to live our lives as much as possible like Jesus. Now we're going to fail. I don't want to say that we can be just like Jesus, but we can try. We can do, I think, better. All right, maybe I shouldn't say we. I could do better. I'm sure absolutely that I could do much better at living my life to be a light that these lost people, these men that aren't able to walk, that need to be healed, could see that light and reach out and hear the gospel. I could do better. Another thing, when Jesus answered that, "My Father worketh hitherto and I work," the time and the place to work for God is when God says to work. When He says to move, that is the time to do it. Not to take upon ourselves, you know, I think tomorrow's going to be a good time. Let's all get back together here and let's have a revival. Let's start up a revival tomorrow. Well, if the Lord moves somebody to stand up and make that announcement, then by all means, let's follow the Lord's will. But to think it up in your mind and decide, hey, that's how we're going to do it, won't work. And I think that the Jesus' answer to them was to that effect, that He was doing the will of the Father. And that's where we today need to be. I'm almost finished here. It's kind of a scattered lesson, I guess. But I guess as I studied this, and the thing that kind of stuck with me was the Jews. This lesson is about the man that got healed and Jesus. But the way that the Jews reacted to Jesus kind of struck me. And I think that the way they reacted was because they got under conviction. They saw something that was wrong, and it bothered them, and they rejected it. They didn't want to hear that they were wrong. They didn't want to hear that they had taken a left turn somewhere down the path, because at some point they had been on the right path. Now, if you read the Old Testament, the Jews were on the right path and on the wrong path, and they went all over the place. And I think that's the case with God's people in general. But at this point in time, they didn't want to hear it. They rejected the Lord because it brought conviction to them. It brought them to a realization of what they were it put a mirror up to them and showed them an image of something that wasn't pleasant to them, and they didn't want to see that. So that thought kind of came to my mind, and I would like to not be like that myself. If the Lord came around and the mirror was put in front of me, I would rather not reject it. I would rather say, yeah, I'm sorry. I failed. Forgive me. Because that's what they could have done. They could have, but they didn't. And that's everything that I've got for today. I hope y'all got something out of it. Does anybody have any thoughts, any questions?
A good lesson here. The angel comes down and troubling the waters of this whale is just way over my head. Why? You know, is he doing it? I don't understand, and you might be able to explain it or murder somebody, but it was, according to this writer, it's saying that they were physically healed and not and spiritually untouched. Was that possibly an opportunity for somebody other than Jesus? All these people are running by this guy. Could that have been an opportunity for them to say, here, you go in and not they? And have the opportunity to give a blessing? Was there more to it than just the physical healing? Was this pool of water an opportunity for people to step up to the plate, so to speak, and not put themselves ahead of everybody else?
You got anything to say on that?
I think it was definitely there for a reason. And I don't know what that reason wasn't just to show God's power. Because these people had kind of moved away from God. And this was one place where they could truly feel His presence. And I think you're right. It goes to the people themselves and what they had become. Because it only healed one person, the first person that got in there. Can you imagine? The fist fights that would occur if somebody trying to, and may have occurred in that day too, and may have done the very same thing. But it gave the people an opportunity, like you said, to do good. But really, to know the real purpose of it, I just really don't. I mean, I can just surmise some things, but I can visualize this day when an angel was there and stirred the water up, and the people just, you know,
you're
going crazy trying to get in there first.
Yeah. I've wondered about that, about the whole situation there with the water and the angel and stuff. I've wondered about that for quite a while myself. I don't understand it. And I wasn't really going to bring this up because I don't know if this is right or not. And in my Bible, this is a study Bible. And here in the reference, it says, speaking of the last part of verse 3 and all of verse 4, it says, the Sinai manuscript omits waiting for the moving of the water and all of verse 4. You know, I don't know if the Sinai manuscript omitted that. How did this get in here? I don't know. So that I won't make any commentary on that.
Huh?
Well, yeah, but where did it come from? Because wasn't the Bible translated from the Sinai manuscript?
Yeah.
So, I mean, where did it come from if it wasn't? You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So I don't really understand that either, other than
it's just the physical and the spiritual part of it. That's because the Lord, I can't fathom that the Lord would have this pool there and make it to work. Only the first person that got in got saved.
Oh, I don't think they were saved.
Oh, I don't either.
No.
I don't either, but outside of that, you know, it's hard for me to wrap my mind around what the purpose
Well, that could have led people to God. But, you know, there's no healing like that now because the church is here. So prior to the church, there was probably things that would occur that would lead people to God. And being healed, to me, would be something that I think that would lead you to think that there's something to God's power. And maybe even the physical part that's healed, it could lead to your spiritual part being healed also. With glory given to God. But then you also have to tinker with the fist fights that are going on with people trying to get in there. So where is your heart at that point in time?
Yeah.
Are you just concerned for yourself? Or what is the real you?
Yeah.
You don't really know the real you until something confronts you.
Oh, yeah.
And you have to deal with it in some shape, form, or fashion. Until that happens, you really don't know. You can say, I'm a good person. I know I'm a good person. But when something like that happens, you may not be as good as what you thought you were if you want to give them that water for anybody else. So I think they walk away there with a lesson of, if they wanted to take that lesson.
Oh, I would like to thank everybody. When I was there, but I said, I would like to thank myself too. Somebody was going to my head too. And I use it or whatever, I just do it. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Because I never had guns stuck to my head. Right. So, and everybody, I think most people want to think in their heart that, yes, I can stand up. So, a weak body might, the mind might just give up on you. So.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. I kind of think that, I'm pretty sure. Without the Lord's strength, I would fail. I mean, when you fail at so many simple things that are easy to do, and then to think about being successful at something that was hard, you gotta really figure, well, I couldn't do this thing that the Lord, or I didn't do this thing that God wanted me to do. Why am I gonna think I'm gonna do that? You know? But if He were there, yeah, so. If that's all, let's keep the Brother Maggard in our prayers until 11 o'clock. Billy, would you dismiss us?